Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Jesse Seema, debut picture book author and illustrator of Not Quite Narwhal. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 326 of the podcast with Jesse Seema. Jesse's debut picture book is about a unicorn who thinks he's a narwhal, but knows he's not like the other narwhals. You've experienced that before, right? That feeling that you don't just quite fit in? Maybe the land unicorns are more your crowd. It's a charming debut, and one I'm very excited to share with all of you today. Here's episode number 326 of the podcast with Jesse Seema. Welcome to the podcast, Jesse Seema. I'm glad
Hi, Matthew.
Yay!
Yay!
It's been a while. We've been friends for so long. Thank you for the internet and for Twitter, and especially, as always, whenever I get a chance to thank Kidlit Art, because that's where all of you go. All y'all go on Thursday nights and share your pretty art, and I just go on and like everything and retweet everything. It's nice.
Thursday nights.
It's nice for people
it is
that
really
are
nice.
Fans of art of children's literature. Like, y'all hang out there and just share your stuff.
Yeah, it's really nice.
I like it. I think it's fun. I think the stuff you do is pretty. All of you make such pretty things. It's nice to
go.
We
also talk about a lot of other things. There's been a lot of discussion of desserts lately, I think. Not to make it sound like it's all art all the time.
But this could end up informing future picture books, so even better.
It's true. Everything. Life is art, and everything is a topic for future works.
But this also means, Jesse, that I've known you, like, since you've been working on Not Quite Narwhal.
Mm-hmm.
Because you were kind enough to offer us the cover reveal for Not Quite Narwhal and All the Wonders, but even then, that was, like, a year after I knew you, so you must have been, I mean, I'm sure the book sold, you know, sometime before that, but it's been an honor to be so involved in your picture book debut. So thank you for allowing me to be part of that world. It's really exciting for me.
Well, thank you very much, because it was also an honor for me to have my book be debuted on All the Wonders. So that was amazing.
Well, girl.
Thank you very much. And we've known each other for a while now.
And your debut is about narwhals. Come on. That's awesome.
Unicorns and rainbows.
land narwhals, as I
that's
told you.
Right.
My favorite phrase I've ever seen invented in a picture book.
So you get the land narwhals and the sea, and unicorns. Sea unicorns. Do not confuse the two.
I love it so much. And I think I mentioned this to Ben Clanton or to somebody. It's been fun that this year, narwhals have just sort of had their time to shine in that really unique and amazing way that, like, nobody knows that that's what's going to end up being published that year. Like, when we had a slew last year of blobfish books, like, it just kind of happens, and it's fun that it does.
It's but, just like unpredictable collective subconscious, right? Like what is going on that is prompting all of these narwhal books all of a sudden? I don't know.
It's cool though.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I love it. Okay, so why don't I give you a chance to share? I know this is something you'll be working on in the future as you start talking to kids in schools and all that. But can you share your synopsis of Not Quite Narwhal?
Oh my goodness. Okay, so Not Quite Narwhal is the story of Kelp, who is a unicorn who is growing up under the sea, believing himself to be a narwhal. And he's not very good at a lot of the narwhal things that other narwhals are great at, like swimming and having a long tusk. He has a very short tusk, and he doesn't really like the food there. And because he's not very good at swimming, one day he gets pulled away by a strong current that brings him up to the surface of the ocean, and he sees up on a cliff a sparkling creature that looks suspiciously like himself. And so he has to go on an adventure to try to find this creature and figure out what it could be. And so it's a mystery. No spoilers on what that creature we can talk about. Clearly, this magical sparkling creature may be a land narwhal, aka a unicorn. So it's a bit of an identity book, trying to figure out where he belongs in the world.
That picture, the spread that you have of when Kelp sees it, it reads. Kelp found himself at the surface, closer to land than he'd ever been before. High up on a cliff, he spotted a mysterious, sparkling creature. It looked so familiar. It looked like Kelp. That picture to me, I just feel like I need to express this to you just to hear it. It felt so much like Harry Potter to me. I think, I don't really? Know why, like the line of moonlight going across the water. I love the stars reflected in the... like a mirrored ocean, like the water is so calm there, and that silhouette up on the moon was just, there was some, I have no idea, like I couldn't name a scene in Harry Potter that would be that scene, but to me I was just like, it's Lupin, it's a werewolf.
Well, I will take that compliment. Lupin was one of my favorite characters. Though I guess really the only unicorns in Harry Potter come to an untimely demise. But
they're special. They're special glittery blood or silver blood.
Right. Poor but unicorns. No, that's not the, these aren't the same unicorns. Don't worry. They're fine.
It's all
these
good.
Unicorns are totally safe. They're fine.
Well, I like that. I mean, it's one of these, the way that the reader is like immediately in with your story on the truth about Kelp, right away, your text, the way that your, I don't know how else to say it other than like your illustrations and your text, the illustrations are deceiving the text.
Right.
To say like, where you were starting off in the beginning saying like, he knew early on that he was different from the others. His tusk wasn't as long and all these things are like, look at all these problems. The food doesn't taste right. This doesn't seem to be right. That doesn't seem to be right. But then you end up saying like, but his friends didn't seem to mind. So Kelp decided he wouldn't mind either. Hey, if nobody else has a problem, I guess I'm cool too.
Right? I mean, it's like real life, I guess, you know, if nobody else really cares about your difference, then, you know, everybody's happy.
And yet though, for people that are just strictly listening to this and not like looking at the book cover or anything, I do want to point out that the narwhals in this book typically, you know, look like the typical narwhals that we've seen pictures of, but Kelp is definitely to their gray. Kelp is white with accents of like turquoise on his tail and hooves, and not only does he have a horn, but there is like a diving mask over his head with a horn.
Looks like a diving bell. It just looks like a goldfish bowl that's over I took some liberties in stylizing that for this, but yeah. Yep.
I loved in your stylizing, by the way, BT Dubs. I love that there was like a rubber ring around the neck to seal it, and also a rubber ring around where the horn pokes through the glass, just to be like, no, look, it's airtight. It's totally fine.
Yeah, no, I mean, there has to be a certain level of reality, right? But you can't go too far, because there were definitely times early on where I was debating things like, oh, should he have like an air tank? But if you go down that road, then the question becomes, where is he refilling this air tank? You know, the logistics of it just get out of hand really quickly.
Yeah.
So, the idea you have to cut it off somewhere. You're like, a hint at the realism. We're going to acknowledge that he cannot breathe underwater, though neither can narwhals, but that he would probably need some assistance here. And that's what you're going to get.
I think it's great. I mean, I think in some ways, too, your art almost reads like a bubble. Mm-hmm. And in that way, to see a clam open and have kelp be born, like, nestled in this bed on the tongue of a clam, if you will. Mm-hmm. I just think it all works. It works really well. What was your process for designing the character? It sounds like you went through a couple attempts until kelp showed what he was supposed to be.
Well, so I actually don't think I ever even drew him with the air tank. It seemed like that was pretty much scratched off right away. It's interesting because I think he always had the helmet, but it changed. It used to be close, more. It would follow the shape of his head more tightly. But other than that, he's pretty much stayed the same. He kind of came in that manner, I guess.
I like that. Right? I like that. Because I like that kelp's legs are sort of just these, like, pointed triangles. They look like snow cones to me. Mm-hmm. there's just a lot of that sort of stylizing that you do throughout here. The lines, the rings on the horn, the accents of the hair color, all of that is carried through in not only the narwhals that we meet, but also in the unicorns. And I just thought that was a nice touch. I think that it helps to bring color for throughout the entire page. There's a scene at the end that it really helps to have the colors changing throughout like that.
Right.
I think in that way too, you play nicely on like this magical feeling, right? It sort of is evocative of a rainbow or something like that, it allows it to sort of glimmer across the page. Oh, my word, glimmer. When we did the cover reveal for you and I said how beautiful I thought the book looked, and then shortly after I received the folded and gathered copy and realized that your book has like a shimmery gloss on it, that like your book literally is magical glimmeriness.
Yeah, I was... It was amazing to work with my art director. It was her idea to use this, what they call it, pearlized stock, which is the shiny stock. And then the shiny parts of the accent sparkles. It's like foil sparkle, I think, on the actual sparkle part. I feel like I'm not explaining this very well, but people will know when they see it what I'm talking about. Like, but they're like the paper itself is shiny, and also there is additional sparkles to the point where your eyes are just going to pop out of your head. No, it sparkles on sparkles and more sparkles.
I don't know quite how else to say it, and this is perhaps what is such a beautiful touch that the art director brought with it there. But the shimmer to the page itself, you called it pearlized.
Mm-hmm. Which is something I had never heard of before.
No, but it does sort of have that glimmer of, I almost want to say like the glimmer like an oil, like oil has, that it sort of feels like a little iridescent type qualities. It has a shimmer to it that is not reflective, but it just sort of, it just has like a nice...
It's almost like a texture. To it. I don't know how to. But yeah, it turned out really well.
It's really beautiful. I mean, it works so well too. To have the front cover image to be underwater, to have this ray shining through, this that has like these rainbow accents again. Like it's a lot of stuff working for this book to bring kids into that place, into the story. And so, well done. Well done on all counts.
Well, thank you.
I also have to say that I think your end papers are like amazing.
Thank you. That was a good, definitely a lot of input from my art director. It started out kind of like this, but we talked a little bit about making it evocative of old golden books, little golden books. Some of the and papers where, you know, it's kind of a pattern, but not exactly a pattern.
Yeah, it kind of feels, for me, the way I sort of always went to describing it was that it sort of feels like a wallpaper almost.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels like those, not like we have now, but it just feels like
right.
a scene that is sort of just welcoming us into this story. Yeah.
Right, like it's like country scenes. I know there's a term for that kind of wallpaper, but I don't remember
I don't know what that is.
Me either.
Well, to have the front end and back end papers be different too, I thought was a nice touch. It just carries the story. It just becomes part of the story that it's not just there to hold a place, but to bring us into the story and to leave us with something, you know, one more last thought before we walk away from the book. It's cute.
One more little punchy joke on the left. You gotta get in there.
I'm trying so hard, Jesse, not to say it. I'm trying so hard. I'm working hard. I know you got me like almost sitting on my hands trying not to talk. It's wonderful. So I need to hear where this came from in your process of writing. Where has this been? I mean, you've got in your author photo a picture of you dressed up like a unicorn.
Mm-hmm. But, I think what is it, like, I don't know, age 5 maybe?
Yeah, no doubt.
Jesse, age 5.
Has this been a story, like this story, is this, I guess I don't know how else to say it other than like how long has Kelp been with you? Where did this come from? Did you go through a ton of different stories and this just ended up being the one that finally felt like it was starting to ring true? Because I know that as writers, we write and write and write and write, and we just get better and better, and then suddenly you're there. I mean, this book just feels, I love that it feels so much like you, Jesse, and also feels just so in touch with your readers.
Well, thank you. It's a good question. And so I did write other books before this one. But this idea has probably been around the longest of any of my book ideas, I would say. But it formed itself before I was thinking about books specifically. I was in college, so I didn't go to college for anything related to books or art or anything.
Yeah.
And so in college, I remember thinking to myself one day about how it would be really funny for there to be a unicorn that lived with narwhals. And I don't remember anything surrounding why this came to my head exactly. And I just kind of kept that idea in my head and would draw like funny little unicorns sometimes in the margins of my notes that were not related to anything having to do with books or art. And so after writing a few other picture book manuscripts, when I was, you know, starting to think more about books, I came back to this idea and realized that it was probably my most intriguing idea of all of them. And I was like, you know, maybe this is something I should really try to put together. And it came together pretty quickly, I would say. And I kind of wrote it and did the dummy sort of at the same time, and forth a little bit. So, and it came together and, yeah.
You said you were doing this while you were in college, is that what you said?
Well, so the dummy part was not. This was after college, after.
I was just going to back up and ask what you were studying. Because it sounds like you weren't directly studying picture book art or something like that.
No, I went to a liberal arts college and I have a bachelor's degree in anthropology.
Okay.
Which was kind of I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and I enjoyed these classes and it kind of gave me an excuse to, you know, read fairy tales and folklore a lot if I could get away with that in some of these classes. I kind of ended up making it a little bit related to books, but no, this was more, I would say that my road to getting into arts and books was kind of like, I was in denial about what I wanted to do for a long time. I didn't really know, you know, it's like looking back, it seems really clear that like I was trying really hard to do these things, but didn't really recognize it at all. 'Cause during college, when I was doing my anthropology degree, I was always drawing, and I used some of my, you know, student job money to buy a drawing tablet and a student version of Photoshop, which is much cheaper than once you're not a student, Photoshop. And I taught myself how to use this. And like, this is what I was doing in my free time when I was like not studying or whatever. This is just, instead of going to parties, I would like teach myself how to use Photoshop. But it didn't really have an end game, I guess. I was doing some t-shirt design for fun. There was a lot of competitions, t-shirt design competitions that you can do online. They still exist. But that's kind of how I taught myself how to do digital art. And I didn't know that I wanted to do books until years after that. So I don't know. I feel like this is a little bit rambly, but
no. Okay. So ultimately, you're unlocking a lot of things in my head.
Yeah. Follow up questions.
Tell me your ultimately, and then I'm going to jump in.
Oh, what was I?
Oh, I'm sorry. I jumped in when you said ultimately.
I don't know. Ultimately, I'm going to say that maybe the rest of that sentence was that I got to doing books. I don't know what it was, but that's okay.
did you study art or illustration at all?
I didn't. Well, so after I graduated college, I still didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I thought about doing a few different graduate programs, but realized that if I didn't know what I wanted to do, I probably should not continue on a path of confusion in like a formal school environment. So I took a year off, and then I went into a program that was, it was an associate's degree program that was specifically for people who already had bachelor's degrees. It was a graphic design program in the city, in New York, at Parsons. And I didn't really like it. So after a semester, I left that program. So that was graphic design, which does definitely have some relation to illustration, but I didn't take any formal illustration classes.
Love it. I love that you just sort of were a student of your passion. And that's great that you were driven so much by that, that you took all your time to just keep drawing and to keep exploring those tools. I love that. I also love that you essentially wrote an anthropologically focused picture book, and you're not even articulating that. I love that there's, you have this character that has like assimilated to one culture and finds that he may actually belong to another culture, but where does that mean that I really belong?
That's true.
It's so beautiful in that way.
I didn't really think about this, Matthew.
This comes from me having a friend that is in education now, but came from a background in anthropology. So the joke always at the lunch table, whenever we get into whatever thing we're talking about, is that sometimes she'll jump into the phrase, well, anthropologically speaking, it's always like, yes, I know that you can't divorce yourself from that way of thinking, which is wonderful. So it's cool to see you bring sort of that, if you will, that mentality, that thinking toward a book that, and it might even just stem from who you are, Jesse, the idea of being a character that doesn't fit in, but that doesn't mean that he has to be rejected by his peers. He just is different from his peers. That tone is really welcoming, and I think it's not an angle that many people take in writing stories for children, but it is definitely an experience that a lot of children do have, feeling different, but not outcast, just different.
Right. I'm really glad that you mentioned that, actually, because it was a big part of when I was originally talking to my editor about things that I really wanted to make sure that we kept about the story, was the fact that the whole thing really is an internal conflict for him, for Kelp, and making sure that it was like, you know, later on, I don't want to, again, no spoilers, but there's some parts where he leaves the narwhals for a little while and then he comes back, and there he's still really nervous, even though no one has given him a real specific reason to think that all of a sudden anyone is going to be judging him or not accepting of what he is.
It's all
feeling
and all of
right, exactly.
That moment when he walks onto land for the first time, and that's as far up as I'll take it, because I love keeping the surprise in picture books. I think right. that, yes, we can all read them very quickly, but there's something that is accomplished in a picture book when you, the reader, experience it. There's something really special. So I do my best not to share those endings because of that experience. But one thing I would love for readers to look for when they read this, and Jesse, something I really appreciated, I always tend to appreciate when something, the way I'm going to word it is when something is laid out in a picture book and then, mm-hmm. and then packed back up neatly. And you do that act, I'll describe it here and you'll understand what I mean.
Okay.
When kelp walks onto land, you sort of have these like three slivers of the sun, in this case, rising from a star uh-huh. sky to the sun rising. And it says, "Kelp swam toward land as fast as he could," which wasn't very fast at all, "hoping that he could catch up with the creature that looked just like him." And that that composition is then mirrored mm-hmm. later in the book as we reach sort of the opposite side of the story arc. And that's something that I really value, that laying out and then packing up of a scene that way. It feels it feels like retracing steps. Mm-hmm. It feels like returning to something that's familiar, but knowing that you've gone on this journey, so things might not have changed, but you have.
Right.
Right?
I always find that very satisfying yeah. in books when I read them as well, where I don't know, it's definitely, it's an indicator of we've left this place and we're coming back to this place. Like you said, changed. Yeah. I'm glad that you liked it.
I like that. I like that a lot. I mean, there were a lot of, if we want to call them like composition choices that you made in this that I thought were pulled off really well. That in particular was something though that I wanted to make sure I shared with you that I thought was really pulled off nicely. One, in fact, that I flipped back and forth between the two pages to see the sun going up and the sun going down mm-hmm. and to see those side by side because it was nice. It was just a nice experience. I like what you're doing here, and I like that this is going to be out there for readers. I can't wait for these young readers to be reading this and like drawing you narwhals, drawing you.
I am looking forward to it so much. Yeah. There's like, definitely, it's like 100% why I'm here, right? It's like, please send me your fan mail. Please send it to me. I will reply, and I really want some drawings.
Well, you as an illustrator get to do that magical thing. And I do mean that it's magical, and that's one of the reasons why I'm drawn to the Kidlit Art Twitter chat. Those of you that draw, it's magic to those of us that don't, to see you touch a pen to paper or to do it digitally and to have something exist that feels like there's life to it when before it was just a blank paper. That's a really cool thing that you get to do, and that in your design too, and that's maybe what I was trying to bring out too, that about the adorable like snow cone legs that Kelp has. But you've designed this character to be based on these geometric shapes that kids can draw. You're looking at triangles and you're looking at, you mm-hmm. know, rectangles with pointed end, with triangles on the end, pointed ends like that. You're looking at shapes that they can recreate. So when I say I'm excited for you to get out there and be drawing with these kids, I also mean that I'm excited because they're going to draw with you. You've designed a character that can be uniquely yours, but that they can express themselves through in drawing.
Well, I am very excited for that. Since this is my first book, you know, I haven't really gotten the opportunity yet to go visit any schools or any libraries or bookstores to hang out with little kids. And I am so excited to draw with them. And I think that they will find, as I did, that the snow cone legs are not just stylistically kind of adorable, but also really practical for trying to, like, if you need an animal to do a thing that they wouldn't normally have to have the anatomy to do. If you give them noodly legs, they can kind of bend around and do all sorts of things.
Yeah, they're almost like flipper-ish legs, but I think mm-hmm. I think the one thing here I don't want to gloss over is your phrase, stylistically adorable.
I mean, they're kind of, you know, they're just short and a little bit chubby. It's good.
Yeah, we'll work it into your school visit presentations that, okay, kids, so we're going to draw this narwhal, and we want to make sure that the legs are stylistically adorable.
It is a key point of this character. Don't forget.
Boy, well, I love what you pulled off here. I think it's a really fun picture book, and I think that as a debut, it speaks really loudly for you and your personality, and for the way that I know you'll be connecting with these kids. I'm excited for you, and I know that you're working on other stuff. I don't know. Do you have anything else that you're able to share with us, though?
Yes,
you do.
I do have things that I can share.
Okay.
Whoa, I know. So my original book. So this book deal was a 2-book deal. So this year is Kelp. Oh, thank you. And next year is another book that is unconnected. So spring 2018, it's a book called Harriet Gets Carried Away. And I just recently finished the final art for that, which is super exciting.
Congratulations, Jesse.
Thank you. Yeah, so that's project number 2.
Well, I'm glad
Penguins.
You know, it turns out that penguins, flippers are also stylistically adorable. I'm just
Yeah, right? I know. Tell me about it. This is how I'm building my career, Matthew.
It's so good.
Just build up the adorable until you can't stand it anymore.
This is perhaps only a compliment I've given to Amy Dyckman before, but I'm just going to put out that you have characters in your books that would make the coolest, like, rub-on tattoos. I'm just going to put it that way.
Did you know that Amy Dyckman and I both have unicorn books coming out the same day?
I didn't know it was the same day that hers comes
out. It's the same day.
I saw that
and we're having a party together.
I saw you were going to have a party. I just saw that on Twitter, but my timing was off to realize that that's when hers comes out.
Right? The exact same day. Valentine's Day, Unicorn Express.
How fun is that? Well, I'm glad you get to party together, too. That's super cool.
Yeah.
Well, yay. Yay for you, Jesse. Yay for all things. Yay for the future, too, because this... I haven't experienced this, and many of the people I think that you and I are in a group with online have not experienced this, that experience of going from, you've been making things, you in this case have sold a book and have had proofs out and have had review copies out, but you're about to step over that threshold and become a published author. That's going to be a thing. And that's a really cool thing. And I know that it's something you take very seriously, but it's something that I really respect in you and those of you that have gone through that. It's a really, really cool thing. And I know a really big honor that kids can select your book, not just from bookstores to buy and to have and to give as gifts and all that, but they also get to be in libraries and take them home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really, really cool thing.
Oh, it's the coolest.
It's
such a weird, an amazing feeling, but also very surreal, I will say, from this side of the debut, I don't know what line. But it feels a little bit like when I was younger and I would keep a sketchbook that you like never really want anybody to see, or at least that was my experience. I would just draw a lot and I didn't really want to show anybody. And if somebody kind of took it and like looked at it, it was this really, it made you nervous, but also excited for them to kind of see it. And it feels like that, but like on a much bigger scale.
Yeah, I'd say so. I have 2 copies of this FNG.
Mm-hmm.
One that I've just kept because we read it at home, but because I had the second copy, I brought it into school, and it's always fun to show the kids when you have an FNG that, you know, it's not bound. So we have to sort of be careful with it. When I hold it up to read it aloud, especially, that's tricky. But, when you lay it down, just the pages aren't bound so they can fall out and get out of order and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But this has been a book, I will tell you, just that you know, that has been on request for a while. With the classes that I've read it with. And they know that, like, I'm not going to let you take the FNG home. That's not going to happen. We'll get a copy for our library. You'll be able to do that. But it's neat to have, to know that not only have they read it and loved it, but that you're also making a book that they want to hear again. Because
that's so exciting.
Because that's a thing. That's a thing, Jesse, that your book will not just be read one time.
I was definitely that kind of kid that loved books that way, you know, where you just read them over and over again.
Good.
So good.
Well, why don't we leave our listeners in that place in the library where these kids are with your book? And I'm going to give you this final say. I'm going to stop talking, stop gushing. We have plenty of time for me to continue gushing about kelp. But let me just ask you this, Jesse. And by the way, side note, thank you again.
Oh, thank you.
On. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for being so generous with this personal work of yours. That means a lot to me. All right, Jesse, here we go. Tomorrow, I'm going to see a library full of children. I'd love to know what message I can bring to them from you.
Okay. So I thought about this for a while. And I think what I would like to tell them is that you should follow your dreams, but also while you're doing that, make room for new dreams that might pop up along the way. Because like I experienced, you know, I didn't even know that this, which has now become my dream job, was even something that was possible. So if you keep working on things that you really love to do, you might find out that they can come together in unexpected ways to make something that's even better than you imagined. And I think that's what I would like to say.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books that they'll love, and the Best Book Ever This Week podcast, hosted by me, with book reviews about all sorts of amazing books. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referred to. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment at allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing this podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Sherry Dusky Ranker and Tom Lichtenheld share Mighty Mighty Construction Site, the sequel to their New York Times best-selling picture book, Goodnight, Goodnight Construction Site. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.